Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
The Mitch Trubisky era is underway, and the rookie gave his performance a C. Should we expect him to struggle this Sunday on the road at Baltimore? And will any amount of struggles concern you about his future as a franchise quarterback? The rookie lights the lamp. Alex DeBrincat gets his first goal in the NHL as the Blackhawks win in Montreal. Will he be a 20-goal scorer? Should we set the sights even higher? And what's been more impressive through four games, the Blackhawks' offense or their defense? And the World Cup is next summer, and for the first time in 28 years, the United States will not be a part of it. Is this a major setback for the future of the game here, or just short-term embarrassment? That is today on Sports Talk Live. Hey there, welcome to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Chuck Arfind in for David Kaplan. Let's meet the panel for today's show. From fansided.com, it's Matt Verderam, the Tribune's Chris Hine, and from 670 to Score, we've got Kevin Zipak. Let's begin with the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky. His debut is over. He did relatively good, 12 for 25, 128 yards, a great scrambling touchdown, one back-breaking interception in the fourth. So, rookie. How would you grade your debut? Here's what he said.
I'd grade myself average to below average. I'm pretty hard on myself. Always think it could be better, and it will be. So just come back, look at the mistakes, go over it with coach. I still got to sit down with him because we just came in yesterday and is already working on Baltimore. So I want to go back through with them and just get on the same page of what I need to improve going forward. But I went through what I thought I did, and it was pretty good in the huddle and at the line of scrimmage. Can always get better, and just need to find more completions and continue to be more efficient.
All right, so not a great grade that he gave himself. How did you think he played?
I think he did okay for his first NFL start against what I think is one of the better defenses in the NFC at home Monday Night Football, all things considered, and having no receivers to throw to.
Yeah.
I thought he did okay, and, you know, he's going to take his lumps, but I thought overall he acquitted himself well. He survived some rough patches. The interception at the end you obviously don't like to see, but overall I would leave that feeling more encouraged than discouraged.
I thought overall, when you look at the full body of work, the stats aren't what you want, but the tools are there. He's mobile. He throws a good ball on the run. He's a big guy. He's got a strong arm. Look, the talent around him right now simply isn't good enough to really judge him off of. Yeah. So I think you're looking on a week-by-week basis for improvement, and I think what he gave you against Minnesota was an average performance from a young kid who was thrust into a tough spot.
I think average is a little bit generous. I mean, if we're looking at it objectively, and you throw out the fact that he was a rookie making his first start, the fact that the Bears really are bereft of talent at most positions, he had a low completion percentage. Quarterback rating was down near 60, I believe. He turned the ball over twice, including crucially in the fourth. So if I'm grading it objectively, I would say probably like a D minus.
I think my expectations are so low for any quarterback to come in and be the Bears quarterback that I felt like I'm ecstatic. Just watch how he plays the game. He's smart. I like that he's mobile. We haven't seen too many good ones in that regard with the Bears, so I like that part of it.
Yeah, I think the skill set is there. And right now at the Bears, let's face it, that's what you're looking for. You're not expecting him to go in there and win games. But did he look better than Mike Glennon? Yeah, he looked a lot better, even though the statistics were similar. But that's more of a function, to me, of what's around him. If the Bears can't run the ball really well, they're not going to play well offensively because they have nobody on the outside who scares you. So I think ultimately goes into Baltimore this Sunday, faces a good defense there. Yeah. What do you have? They are second in the league with 9 interceptions. Can he stay away from turning the ball over?
I think he's got that it factor. You know, there's this thing about him, the intangibles, that you can't necessarily use for statistics. Because, like, the stats were a little worse than what Mike Glennon's done. But if you watched him play, you're thinking, oh, there's something more there.
You just look at him and you think, like you said, Matt, that he's got the tools to be a good NFL quarterback. Mike Glennon, it's like you're holding your breath out there. That disaster doesn't happen. And more often than not, that's what happened. But I still think, you know, the whole point of this, I just go back to how badly the Bears, I think, mismanage this situation. They go through the entire summer and say, we're not going to throw Trubisky in there. We're going to let him study. We're going to let him watch. And then, you know, we were all saying by the time week 4 or 5 rolls around, let's see if that actually holds true. It didn't. And he's getting his first two starts against the Vikings and on the road against the Ravens, two of the tougher defenses in the league. I just think if you were going to do this, like, why didn't you just do it from week one?
Trial by fire, as they say. Minnesota, definitely one of the better defenses in the NFC. Baltimore is always there defensively. If you look at the stat line, like you said, it was Glennon-esque, but if you watched the game, you did see flashes of the mobility, getting the ball in there in tight spaces at times. A couple times in the first quarter, made a couple good plays and brought back by penalties. You know, that's not going to help a good quarterback at all. They could have maybe had a touchdown, maybe 13 points in that first quarter, had it not been for all the penalties. So that's not going to help him at all either.
You know, it is a rebuild, and they're not expected to win. But being – I was actually on the field doing a story unrelated to Trubisky on Monday. You could just feel the buzz in Soldier Field. We haven't heard or felt that buzz in a long time. I know it was a Monday night game, but this was all about Trubisky.
Oh, yeah. Well, because let's face it, with the Bears, when is the last time they've had a franchise quarterback? Jim McMahon, Sid Luckman. I mean, you're going back a ways. So I think the idea is in the NFL today, if you don't have a franchise quarterback, you are not winning the Super Bowl. You're not getting to a Super Bowl. And in that division, you're not winning the division. So Trubisky gives you that hope that, hey, even if we stink this year, maybe we're going somewhere in the future. They play the Ravens on Sunday. They're 10th in the league against the pass, ninth in the league in yards per attempt against. So this is a good secondary. I don't know how he's going to fare because who's catching the ball for him?
Okay, so to follow up on that, he needs some receivers. And
yes.
who he has right now, that's who he's going to have. Let's look ahead to next year. Who can they logically sign, acquire, draft that's going to make this wide receiver core better than it is?
I think you're looking at trying to find a couple of veteran guys who can give him something to move forward with. Like Randall Cobb, maybe he becomes a free agent. I know the Packers, there's been talk that maybe he's not playing up to his contract. Jeremy Maclin could come out of Baltimore. He, of course, after being cut by Kansas City in the offseason this year. Those guys aren't going to be premier players, but they give you something. They give you somebody who can lead the way a little bit. As far as the draft goes, that's something that it's an ever-evolving board all the way through the combine.
Well, I looked at this. At 1-4, the Bears are in last place now for the 25th consecutive week in the regular season.
It's not great.
That's not good. That needs to improve. You feel like it's going to improve this year? Is this team going to be able to turn around? Can Mitch Trubisky turn this season around for the Bears?
Maybe he'll give you a little bit of hope. I don't know that it gets him out of last place, considering that the other teams in the division are all, I think, good to very good football teams. Yeah. I think they're bound to be in last place the rest of the year. I will say this, the defense under Vic Fangio, if you can get the offense going in the right direction, I think with Vic Fangio and what they have going on in defense, I think it's good enough that if you can get the offense going, you could be a competitive football team in the near future. It's just a matter of getting that personnel in place and developing Trubisky.
When you looked at the schedule before the season, everybody thought the first five games would be an absolute gauntlet. So the fact that they got one victory, I think that's okay. And the schedule will lighten up a little bit now. The interior of the offensive line, I think, is really a big strength of this team still. So if they do get the running game going, that's going to take a huge bit of pressure off of Trubisky. And now his guy, Tanner Gentry, is back in the mix now. They had a little bit of a rapport in the preseason. I don't think too much of him, but it's something. You know, they have no wide receivers on this team at all. So throw something against the wall. Maybe they find some chemistry, something to look forward to, maybe.
Maybe. Well, let's move to the Blackhawks now. They spoiled the Canadiens' home opener last night, beating Montreal 3-1. Rookie Alex DeBrincat scored his first NHL goal. This kid's exciting. I love watching this guy.
He's very good. 19 years old out of the OHL. And he's playing with Patrick Sharp on a line. And last night, they were really honing in on trying to get him a goal. And you could just see on that play where DeBrincat is just lined up in perfect shooting position, waiting for that puck, slams it, and he beats Carey Price, one of the best NHL goaltenders that there is out there right now, for his first NHL goal. I think it speaks to how strongly he's come into camp.
Yeah.
You know, he's undersized at 5'7", so strength and how is he going to be able to battle for the puck and put up with NHL defensemen? He's passed every test so far.
I don't want to compare him to Patrick Kane, but I just want to kind of have an idea. His skill set versus Kane's at that age, where do they compare?
I think DeBrincat at this point is more of a scorer. Kane, I think at that point in time, was more of a playmaker.
Yeah.
He wasn't necessarily always looking to score. DeBrincat, 60-plus goals in the OHL, he's looking to score when he gets the puck. And I think that's the biggest difference between them at this age.
Yeah.
Kane, obviously, now is you know, all things offensive. But I think right now, DeBrincat is more of a scorer.
Okay, so we were talking beforehand. 20 goals? Could he score 20 goals if he could? Over and under, what do you think on him this year?
I think if he's able to stick around, I think 20 goals is a possibility.
Stick around, so you think he might not stick around?
Yeah, I mean, it's all a matter of how is he going to adapt defensively and how is he going to hold up physically? Is he going to get injured? But if he stays healthy and he's able to play well enough defensively that he keeps drawing in the lineup, 20 goals is a possibility, I think.
Yeah, I mean, DeBrincat, as you mentioned, 19 years old. I think the biggest concern with him is his size. 5'7", 165, 170 soaking wet. But we see a player similar to that size in Johnny Gaudreau up in Calgary, who's been really good for the Flames. He's really been their best player for a couple of years now. And I think it helps, too, with DeBrincat. He has so much talent around him that it's going to take away some of the pressure and some of the defense. And so he's going to get some more ice, going to get some open looks. You mentioned in the OHL with Erie, he had three terrific years there. Scored at least 50 goals each year, had over 100 points each year. Last year at 65 goals. I would take the over on 20 if he can play. Maybe not by a ton, but I think he's a really, really good-looking prospect.
Yeah, I'm going to say over as well. I mean, if anybody's earned the benefit of the doubt in this town or anywhere really in sports over the last decade or so, it's Stan Bowman and his ability to just find guys, whether it's in the draft, from the Russian League, from a team where a guy's an outcast and maybe he disappointed there. Guys come to Chicago, and it is because of the talent surrounding them a lot of the time as well. They just produce. And if he can manage to stay healthy, you know, it's early times here in the season. If he manages to stay healthy, I'm going over 20 as well. He looks like a heck of a player, extremely talented at such a young age.
It's only four games, but what's more impressive to you, the offense or the defense so far?
The offense, clearly.
Well, they had the one big game.
They did, but they've kept it up.
Right.
And the defense, you know, the last two games has been a little shakier. They allowed 42 shots last night to Montreal, and Toronto ran circles around them the night before. But to me, the offense has looked explosive. Brandon Saad back on that top line with Jonathan Toews. That trade is looking great for the Hawks.
Yeah.
You know, Nick Schmaltz has been out the last two games, but the time he had with Patrick Kane and Ryan Hartman, they looked like a really dangerous line as well. I think they had like 12 combined points in that game against the Penguins. And so that allows Anisimov to drop down to the third line, and Patrick Sharp is there, DeBrincat is there, and that's a pretty strong third line.
Yeah.
So they have three legitimate scoring lines on this team, which is, you know, maybe as dangerous as most teams in the league.
They'll be good in the playoffs, that's for sure, too, having that kind of depth. I want to go to what happened in Vegas last night. It was the home opener for first game at home for the Las Vegas Golden Knights, and obviously we're all aware of what had happened in Vegas with the shooting there. And this was a hockey game, but, you know, usually you have the pomp and circumstance for the first game, but they kept it very minimal, and you had no advertisements on the boards. Just it said Vegas strong. It was quite a scene there, putting things in perspective. Kind of a somber but yet exciting debut for them.
Yeah. This was really well done last night, and a really emotional. I didn't get to see it because I was covering the Hawks, but I watched some of the clips today, and just a really nice job by the Vegas franchise. And it's interesting to see them in the league this year.
Yeah,
I think obviously with the tragedy and then all of a sudden, you know, sports trying to help heal just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, obviously can't do much more than just give somebody maybe a distraction for a little bit of time, but really well done by the Golden Knights, giving everybody those few hours and giving some proper respect to the victims, the first responders. And, you know, for the team, what a start for them. 3-0, I believe the first expansion team since 67, when they moved on from the original six to ever go 3-0. So not bad for Vegas.
And they beat Arizona last night 3-0. Much ahead here on Sports Talk Live. Coming up, D. Rose, LeBron, and D. Wade all played against the Bulls last night. That looks weird. As members of the Cavs, will Bulls fans root for Rose to do well? And what about D. Rose saying he did try recruiting LeBron and company back in 2010? Meanwhile, the United States men's soccer team couldn't win a game against Trinidad and Tobago. Now we'll be watching next summer's World Cup at home. How big of a blow is this to the growth of the game here? That and more coming up.
When the game ends, switch back to CSN Chicago for Bears postgame live.
The team will take you through all the key moments from the field, hear from Coach Fox, and get live player reactions. Bears postgame live after every Bears game on CSN Chicago.
The players got to be good enough, too. So a lot of people on social media right now want to say it's Jurgen Klinsmann's fault, it's Bruce Arena's fault, it's Sunil Gulati's fault. By the way, as an ex-player, every single one of those players,
they can take some
nightmares
yep.
for the rest of their lives, because this is an utter embarrassment with the amount of money that is in Major League Soccer and in this sport. You can't get a draw, a tie against Trinidad? Max, you don't deserve to go to the World Cup. And the discussion after Brazil, Max, was can we beat the Colombias and the Belgians and the Argentinas of the world? You kidding me? We can't beat Trinidad on a field that's too wet and too heavy? What are we doing? What are we doing?
What are we doing, Taylor Twellman of ESPN? My goodness. Taylor venting definitely about the loss. Your thoughts, CPAC? I mean, this is a terrible loss.
Yeah, I was watching that game last night. It took me a while to find it on the old cable box there. I was on BN Sport, I believe, not, you know, exactly NBC
wait,
Chicago.
Wait, where was it?
BN, B-E-I-N.
Oh, yeah.
Part of the Al Jazeera network.
Yes, yes, okay.
So there you go.
But that kind of
says, on your channel guide.
Yeah, yeah.
That says a lot about, I guess, the interest in United States soccer, and that interest is certainly going to be going down now. You know, there's one thing every 4 years that usually people in this country care about, and it's the World Cup in regards to soccer. And especially now in a time where everything is so divisive and people are always on one side of the issue and arguing with one another, there's one time every 4 years where people can actually all band together and root for one collective. And now the fact that they're not going to be there, I think it's horrible for the game in this country. It's horrible for all those players, the older players who won't be back in 8 years for the next one, the younger players who would have benefited a ton from going over there for the first time, and for the fans, first and foremost, because I've been trying to grow soccer in this country for as long as I've been alive, for 31 years. And for the first time in my life, just not see the United States at the World Cup, it's going to be incredibly surreal, disappointing. I was laughing, honestly, yesterday because it was so preposterous. But next summer, when the games start rolling around, I'm going to be like, wow, this is really awful. And it starts at the top with U.S. Soccer, with the manager of the team, with the president of U.S. Soccer, with the way that the MLS is run, with the way that all of the youth leagues are run through U.S. Soccer. It's a whole systematic nightmare, frankly, and it needs to be completely overhauled, and
well,
they've got time to do it now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not asking you, I'm not expecting you to have the answers.
No.
But as a soccer
fan. Certainly not.
How do you fix this?
Like I said, you know, it's, you have to clear house. It's the president.
And what can they do? Like, what the foundation has to change?
First of all, one of the big things that I see bandied about a lot is, first of all, for the MLS, instead of just having it run like any other sports league here in North America, you adapt the European style of promotion and relegation, which gives franchises more incentive to not tank, so to speak. And you don't see tanking as much in MLS as you do as much in the NBA or Major League Baseball or anything like that, because the draft is a lot different. Yeah. But it gives teams more incentive to not just kind of go through the motions, and it gives lower teams the incentive to give themselves a chance to get back up and show some underexposed players and kind of names that people might not have heard of some chance too. So it's something they've been doing in Europe forever, and it's something that probably needs to happen here. But until you do clear house and start making changes with U.S. Soccer, the organization itself, I don't see anything really changing.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned 31 years, and we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for soccer to become what everyone thinks it could be, you know, and really is in most other countries around the world. I'm 29, so I'm in the same boat. You know, every 4 years, get excited about the World Cup, and it's exciting and it's fun, and you watch and you get into it. And then typically the United States is out after the round of 16, and then it's like, okay, well, I'll wait a couple more years till the Women's World Cup rolls around, then maybe we'll win that. And so this is just, this is a crushing blow. Whenever you have momentum and you're an underdog, you want to keep that going. You do not want to stop that boulder from going up the hill. And now it feels like it's coming all the way back down. And like you said, there has to be some kind of cleansing of this, whether that means a new manager, a new GM, on down the line. because when you lose to Trinidad, I'm not going to pretend I'm a soccer expert, but I know that Trinidad shouldn't be beating the United States in anything.
They're not good. Just take it from me.
To lose that game, knowing all you need is a draw, is a disaster.
Coaching had a lot to do with it too, didn't it?
The coaching change when they got rid of Jurgen Klinsmann a couple years back and they brought back Bruce Arena, who was another MLS retread. And one of the, I guess, conspiracy theories you could say was that Arena was brought back by U.S. Soccer to just play MLS players. And so the United States national team could be an advertisement for MLS to try to draw up interest in that. So you see a lot of older players, like I mentioned, like Clint Dempsey, guys like Michael Bradley, Tim Howard, guys who in their primes were fine players.
Yeah,
most of them played over in Europe.
Like.
But now they're all past it, and the MLS is what it is. It's a retirement league. It's where guys come to finish out their careers and kind of coast by at a lower competition level, and that caught up to them in a massive, massive way.
So will Americans watch this, the World Cup, knowing the U.S. isn't in it?
Casual, everyday sports fans, no, probably not. Yeah. I would say I'm a big soccer guy. I will absolutely watch it. I watch it every 4 years. I even watch the European Championships every 2 years. I watch the Premier League every weekend. So I will be interested in it, certainly. For Joe, American sports fan, probably not so much.
Well, last night I turned on the television and I saw LeBron, I saw Wade, and I saw Rose all playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers against the Bulls. And the 2012 version of myself was in, like, catatonic shock. I could not believe what I was watching. I mean, just seeing Rose there in a Cavs uniform is odd. But then you just throw in... This could have been. What could have been? These three could have been playing for the Bulls, and now they're playing against the Bulls. And I needed a drink, basically, to get myself through this thing.
I think back to that was the summer of 2010, right?
Yep.
D. Rose was pretty heavily criticized for not, like, reaching out to recruit these guys, and 7 years later, he's trying to make amends for it by saying, "Oh yeah, I was a part of a video to recruit these guys." I think he was. He just wasn't making a big show of it at the time.
Well, we actually have the soundbite from D. Rose from yesterday. This is what he told the media about this revealing that he made a video.
I tried too. Like, people always said I didn't recruit. I tried to recruit. I put out a video, but it wasn't for me to say that. I felt like the organization was supposed to say that, and they didn't.
What did you do?
I put out a video for them.
You made a video?
Him, Chris Bosh, and LeBron.
And the organization didn't send it?
I mean, it ain't for me to say that, but yeah, they didn't say anything about it. They sent it. I don't know if they really actually looked at it or played the video, but I made a video. But at the time, it wasn't for me to say that.
You mean a video of you talking, recruiting, saying, come play with me and come to Chicago?
Yes, I did that.
Why is this only coming out now? It seems like this is, you know.
I just wanted to see who had my back.
There's so much to unpack there. First off.
Yes.
I want to see who had my back. How do you guys interpret that?
I'm not sure how to interpret that. What does that mean exactly? Like, is he had his back then? Had his back now? I'm a little.
Well, does someone and is someone in the Bulls who I would think know that he did this?
We've heard lots of unsavory things about the Bulls front office. You know, whether it's Paxson, Foreman, maybe even up the ladder a little bit to the Reinsdorfs. A lot went on during Derek's injuries here in regards to him being cleared by doctors, and the organization would come out and say, oh, hey, he's cleared. He should be going out there. He should be playing. And then Derek would kind of take umbrage to that, saying, I'm not ready mentally, physically. I'm not ready to be out there. And I think it was counterproductive at the time for the organization to be coming out and saying that. Of course, you want to push him to get back out on the floor as quickly as possible, but I don't think publicly is the way to do that.
Yeah.
And I think Derek alluding to who has his back was a not so thinly veiled shot at the Garpax regime here and him thinking that they never really had his back, especially post knee injuries.
Yeah, because if he did make this video and there was so much talk at the time about him not making a video, you'd think somehow that video would have gotten out.
Yeah, it seems odd that 7 years later, he's like, yeah, I made a video 7 years ago. Things didn't work out. Look, the reality of it is, everybody recruits five-star athletes in collegiate sports, but nobody cares unless you land them. So whether or not he made a video, didn't make a video, you didn't get anybody to come play here. And the reality of it is you ended up getting hurt. Things went south. You have a messy divorce with the Bulls. You end up on the Knicks. That's a shame.
Yeah.
And then now you're on Cleveland. And it has gone sideways for the Bulls, to say the least.
I want to see this video. It exists. It's out there somewhere.
I just think of how you can make a video, and that's great, but like I think of how heavily, like, you know, like LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade were like talking about free agency then, and, you know, a few years ago, how heavily the Warriors were trying to recruit Kevin Durant and, you know, constantly like texting him, talking to him, trying to get him to, you know, tampering rules be damned, yeah. trying to get him to come to Golden State. And, you know, you just make a video, like, it almost seems like it's a half-hearted recruiting.
That's Derek, effort. Though. That's his personality. He's not Dwayne Wade. He's not LeBron James. He's not even Chris Bosh.
He's not Jimmy Butler.
He's certainly not Jimmy Butler. Yeah. He is such a low-key, understated guy, and this completely fits his personality to me. Maybe there was a video. I believe him, I guess.
Follow-up is to go to Dwayne Wade and say, Dwayne, did you see the video? And I think he'd be pretty open about it and say, yeah, I saw it, or no, I didn't see it, or and what did he do in it? I would love to know that. That's really, I mean, it's all under the bridge, but how much attention we paid to this? I mean, this took up. David Kaplan was probably on this show, and he spent hours talking about this recruitment that did not happen. So here we are all this time later, and I need some closure. Okay, Lauri Markkanen, meanwhile, I want to talk about him. Fun last night. I mean, they beat the Cavs. It was a preseason game, but 15 points in the fourth quarter. We're seeing the potential. Now, he's not going to have this kind of consistency, certainly his rookie year, I don't think, but he can hit the shots. And, I mean, obviously, they're going to, if he can find a way to do this more often, they're going to defend him a little differently. But this was encouraging to see him do this.
Yeah, I mean, Markkanen was somebody who was a terrific player at the University of Arizona. He's somebody who really a lot of people kind of compared to a Porzingis from the standpoint of big guy, can step out and shoot. He's, you know, and will he be Kristaps Porzingis? Well, the Bulls certainly hope so.
Yes,
but even
hopefully.
If he's, you know, three quarters of that,
yeah,
that's a nice building block after you trade away Jimmy Butler. You bring some stuff back, Markkanen being part of that package. But you like in that package you just saw, the, you know, turnaround jumper, a little step back. Those are the types of things that in preseason, maybe the score doesn't matter, but those types of moves, that's something that can obviously translate going forward.
You guys buying on Justin Holiday? 28 points, 11 rebounds? No?
As a 28-point per game guy?
Yeah, how about as a 20-point guy? 20-point guy. 18? 15? 12?
I'll give you 14.
14
I'll give
points
you 14
a game
for Justin Holiday.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fair.
All right, more Mitchell Trubisky talk is ahead. We know the Bears fans love him, but how have his teammates reacted to him? Our Bears insider J.J. Stankovic is going to join us with the latest from Hal's Hall next on Sports Talk Live.
After every Cubs game, stay tuned for Cubs Post Game Live, sponsored by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, with David Kaplan and David DeJesus. Hear from Cubs players inside the locker room. Get a live look inside Joe Maddon's post-game press conferences and more.
Tomorrow night at the United Center, it's our first authentic fan night. Stop by our location on the concourse to join in on the action and prove that you are an authentic fan. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/Blackhawks for more information. All right, we're talking Bears with our Bears insider, J.J. Stankovic, who joins us now from Hallis Hall. Okay, J.J., the Bears lost to the Vikings, but did Mitch Trubisky win the hearts and minds of Chicago?
He certainly did in the locker room. You hear players talk about Mitchell Trubisky, and they just raved about the way that he went about his business on Monday night, his command of the huddle, just the spark of the offense. You know, I was talking to Trey McBride, and he said that he could really feel the confidence that Trubisky had in himself, and that in turn gave himself, Trey McBride, more confidence to go out and almost make a couple of plays. There are a couple of questionable calls against the Bears' receiving crew on Monday, but for the Bears, just that confidence that Trubisky has certainly is permeated through the locker room, and for sure I think for the fans too, it should go for them as well.
You know, and I'm thinking about who else is on the team or just who is on the team. Imagine if he had like a Brandon Marshall on his team. I mean, the wide receiver talent is not there, and yet we're in a way expecting him to be a great quarterback. Are we expecting too much of him considering the lack of talent around him?
I don't know if we're expecting too much of him considering the lack of talent. I mean, listening to every player and coach on this team this week, the message has been if they just clean up the penalties, that will help everyone out across the board, and it would make Trubisky's stat line look a little bit better. You know, the Bears coaches had a meeting with players this week about penalties and just trying to clean that aspect of the game up. Every play, you know, Zach Miller said they can't keep shooting themselves in the foot. He's absolutely right about that. If the Bears just clean up that aspect of the game, don't commit so many penalties, it's going to put Trubisky in better situations, and then in turn, he's going to look better.
What does he need to work on, though, specifically? I mean, we're looking at just one game, specifically also against a Ravens defense coming up this week that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think Baltimore's 9 interceptions or, you know, some pretty high total like that. This is going to be another test for Mitchell Trubisky as he just continues to gain experience running the Bears offense. Monday night was a good start. He kind of learned that the windows in the NFL are a little bit tighter than they were in college. Obviously, the Harrison Smith interception on the pass late in the game, that was a throw that he regrets. He took ownership for and certainly would have liked to have back. But he needs to continue to grow, just get more experience facing different defenses, working again, you know, in different game plans. And as he goes on, the Bears are confident that he will continue to just make these incremental improvements as the season goes on and as he continues to kind of grow that experience bank.
All right, I want to ask you about Tanner Gentry because he's been promoted from the practice squad. How involved will he be in the offense? Because these two did seem to click in training camp.
Yeah, I would expect him to be involved a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, your wide receiver one or even two for that matter. But he is a guy who Trubisky had good rapport with starting from rookie minicamp, OTAs through training camp. These two had a good rapport. We obviously saw it on that 45-yard touchdown against the Tennessee Titans in preseason week 3. But Gentry's a guy who Trubisky likes. He can go up and get the ball. He tracks the ball in the air really well. He just has a good knack for the position. That being said, though, Gentry is a guy who the Bears waived twice and no team picked up. So I would kind of temper the expectations a little bit on him, but let's see if he can develop that rapport with Trubisky as the season goes on.
All right, then Tariq Cohen. He was like a phenomenon after the first 2 weeks. He caught 8 passes in both of his first 2 games. 1 pass on Monday for negative 6 yards. Can we say that he's going to be more involved in the offense against Baltimore?
Well, let's see. You know, the thing about the NFL is that when they figure out what you do well, they're going to try to take that away. They've figured out what Tariq Cohen does well, and they're now trying to take that away. You know, Dal Loggins kind of mentioned it in passing today that Cohen was doubled a lot on Monday night, and that's something that teams are going to do. They're going to identify Cohen as the Bears' best offensive weapon, and they're going to try to take him away. How he kind of responds to that is interesting. We saw on Monday night he danced around a little bit too much. He didn't plant his feet enough and kind of go vertically, and so he was moving a little bit too horizontally. That's something that John Fox did say they had a bit of a conversation with him about. That's something that as the Bears go forward, they're going to need Tariq Cohen to kind of deal with being the center of attention a little bit better.
All right, one last question, and it's about Willie Young on injured reserve. How big of a blow is this for the defense?
It's another big blow for a defense that has sustained so many tough injuries this year. You know, the Bears now have Pernell McPhee and Leonard Floyd as your kind of two go-to pass-rushing outside linebackers. Sam Acho will get some more time. Maybe Isaiah Irving, who had 3 sacks in the preseason. He was promoted to the active roster for Monday night. He could get some time as well. But just for the Bears, the front 7 still can be a strength of this team. They just have to weather these injuries. Some good news, though, today. Nick Kwiatkowski was listed as a limited participant in practice. That's the first time he's even been a limited participant in a practice since he suffered that chest injury in week 2. So maybe the Bears are moving a little bit closer to getting Kwiatkowski back. They obviously will get Danny Trevathan back on Sunday against Baltimore as well.
All right, J.J. Stankiewicz, thank you so much for your time. He joins us from Hallis Hall. We appreciate it. All right, more Bears after the break. Mitch Trubisky was good, but the Bears' 2-point conversion, oh, that was incredible. We got to talk about that. The play has a history, too. Dal Loggins explains it. That and more next.
For Chicago's sports talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pac wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
All right, here's the best play by the Bears in like a decade. Oh, the 2-point conversion. Trubisky scores on this. This was incredible, and we're going to break this down a little bit. But before we do, let's hear from Dal Loggins, who put this thing together. What's the history of it?
2000. I'm a freshman at Arkansas. I knew I wanted to coach my whole life. And I had this note I'd kept since I was a freshman in high school in 1995. And I used to record. Back then, you didn't have DVR. You just record VHS tapes. And my parents, my dad, it goes back to my dad, tell me, like, son, if you want to do this, you got to work as hard as you can. And obviously, I was going to be a walk-on at the University of Arkansas, and I was an extreme overachiever as a high school quarterback. Not that you guys wouldn't believe that with my size, but I knew that I was going to have to outwork everyone and study, and I just have a passion for football. And had a notebook, and I was watching the Tampa Bay Bucks play a game on a VHS, and their offensive coordinator was a guy named Les Steckel, and they ran the play. So I finished at Arkansas 2000, and I drew the play up in my notebook that I'd had since I was a freshman in high school. And I go to finish at Arkansas, work 1 year for the Cowboys, and I go to the Tennessee Titans, where Coach Steckel had been the offensive coordinator in their Super Bowl run and that stuff. And he happened to be Coach Mike Munchak's next-door neighbor. And his son, we ended up hiring his son the spring of 2013 to be our offensive quality control guy. And I got to meet Coach Steckel one day, and we go to Easter with Coach Chris Palmer and Mike Munchak and Les Steckel and his wife. And I had this notebook, and I said, Coach, I got to ask you about one play. You ran 13 years ago, and he called it Donut. And I don't know why. He's a really creative guy. And they did, I think it was Sean King and Mike Allstott, maybe work done. And so I've always had this play, you know, as a coaching staff upstairs. We had this play, but you got to have Zach Miller. You got to have a tight end or a Mike Allstott that you trust with the ball handling. And so it's just an option play off that. That's where the play came from. Coach Les Steckel deserves all the credit for it, and we just stole it 13 or 17 years later.
And that is the documentary known as The Two-Point Conversion, put together by Darrell Loggins. That was quite a descriptive analysis of what went down there. Your thoughts on what you saw? Let's start with the guy who covered the team.
I don't know what to say after that story. I feel like that story really covered all bases for us.
You can't add on to that?
No, I think, look, it's great creativity, even if he didn't draw up the play, even if he took it from 17 years ago.
He stole it.
Right, sure. But you know what? Everything's stolen in the NFL for the most part. So give Loggins credit. It totally took Minnesota by surprise as well. It should. I think if you're looking at the Bears, and we've talked at the beginning of the show about their maybe deficit of talent, shall we say, at the receiver position. So creativity is at a premium right now at One Household.
I mean, I'm watching it for the first time as it happened, and I saw the ball appear in Trubisky's hands as he crossed the goal line. I was thinking it was like the hidden ball trick. I thought I was being fooled. I thought there was something wrong with the television, or at least my sight. I couldn't believe he actually had the ball in his hands. How did he do it?
I don't know how the pitch got there. I thought the pitch right there was going to get like intercepted or batted away or something like that, and maybe run.
I missed the pitch. That was
points.
The problem.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I was looking at the running back.
I was surprised it got there. That was my reaction to that play. Yeah. And you know, maybe they should have saved it for a goal line situation.
Fooled our cameraman
for
right
6
there.
Points instead of 2 points. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been watching my old Les Steckler VHS tapes as well, guys. So I saw that one coming from a mile away, honestly. No, I appreciate the ingenuity. You know, it's nice to see something a little bit different, especially with a team like the Bears, which, you know, they're not the most fun team to watch, especially the last few years.
That play will give me a week.
Yeah.
Like, that's good. I'm good for a week.
That'll buy you a week.
One play like that, you'll buy me a week. That'll buy me a week. I want to ask you about Leonard Floyd. Surprise, by the way, he's been playing.
No, I think Leonard Floyd last year had 7.5 sacks, I believe it was, in 12 games. So we knew Leonard Floyd could play. And the Bears have, and you mentioned it earlier, Chris, they have a good defense. Like, this is a team that the front seven especially, they can play. This isn't a team bereft of talent on that side of the ball. Yeah. And I think Floyd is probably the best player, or at least the player with the highest ceiling. And so they look like they've hit on that pick. By the way, on that safety, I don't know what Sam Bradford was waiting for, although I feel bad for him. He looked hurt the entire game.
Yeah.
But Leonard Floyd, he's somebody you can build off of in that front seven. And let's face it, right now, the Bears need as many of those young building blocks as they can get.
Anyone think they can go into Baltimore and beat the Ravens?
Yeah, because the Ravens don't have a very good offense, so I think it's definitely possible.
Yeah.
That game is going to be, I think, a really low-scoring turnover-prone game.
I hope so, because I picked up Baltimore in my fantasy league. The defense.
I picked them up 2 weeks ago, anticipating this.
Oh, just for this game?
just for this game. It's going to be low-scoring, but the Ravens aren't anything special either. Right. So, hey,
what
it could
happen.
I mean, it needs to be said that Joe Flacco threw for 28 yards against Jacksonville 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So, there's Joe Flacco, there's hope for the other team.
Yeah.
That being said, it's a rough place to win in. Baltimore's won 7 of the last 10 there. And the Ravens are a team that is in first place or tied for first place in the AFC North alongside Pittsburgh. I think it's a tough ask. I think if the Bears are going to win, they're going to have to force some turnovers in this game.
The AFC North kind of down this year in general.
It's not great.
Cleveland always down, of course. We know that. But Cincinnati's taking a step back. Pittsburgh doesn't look as good as a lot of people thought they would be. A lot of people had them in the Super Bowl. They look kind of average. It's a winnable game. You're going to have to see improvement, though, from Trubisky. Going to have to take better care of the ball. Dowell Loggins maybe review his old VHS tapes, come up with some more trickery with his little head poking above the podium just barely there. That was adorable. But yeah, I think there's a chance. You know, Baltimore, they're not world beaters, certainly. And the Bears, if they can get to Flacco, put him on his back, then they have a chance.
You know, if the Ravens, they're watching. They watched Monday Night Football. They saw what Trubisky did. What do you think they're going to do to counter him on Sunday?
I think they're going to drop 7 and drop 8 and make him have to find those windows. Look, Baltimore is a team that can get pressure without blitzing. Terrell Suggs still playing at a high level, 36 years old. Jimmy Smith, one of the better corners in the game. Pair him with a veteran like Brandon Carr. I think that the Bears are going to have to run the ball and force Baltimore to try to stop them with those run blitzes into those A-gap run fits. But I think ultimately Trubisky's going to have to try to stretch out that defense a little bit, play action pass. I don't
How?
Know. I think that's the point, right? Like, I think he can do it in terms
he
of his
can do
arm.
It. Yes.
But they basically the four of us trying to catch the ball.
Kendall Wright
so
go
that's
deep?
The problem. Kendall Wright could go deep and just keep going through the tunnel. Like, I don't know.
Tanner Gentry.
Like, Marcus Wheaton has more penalties than receivers.
That's your answer, I think.
I
know. But in terms of, like, who they need, the kind of guy they need is Marcus Wheaton, but he's not going to be that guy.
Because of the skill set. Right,
right, yeah. Right.
The idea of a Marcus Wheaton.
Marcus Wheaton
is better than actually Marcus Wheaton.
A Marcus Wheaton type.
Yeah. Yeah,
Marcus Wheaton.
He is collecting a paycheck with a ski mask on right now. It is unbelievable how bad he's been for them.
Yes. Hopefully he arrives in Baltimore and delivers because they need him. Okay, for those of you who bailed on the game at Wrigley, we're going to talk some baseball next as we wrap up Sports Talk Live. Stick around.
Catch a brand new episode of Beer Money presented by Coors Light. Chicago's favorite sports trivia show, where fans are put to the test for a chance to take home cash. Every Sunday night at 7 on CSN.
Hey, coming up in a few minutes, Cubs postgame live from Wrigley, David Kaplan and David Jesus with many thoughts on this game, plus postgame reaction from Dusty, Madden, Strasburg, etc. here on NBC Sports Chicago. So, we've been avoiding it for 50 minutes. We'll talk about the Cubs game right now as the Cubs are trailing right now 5-0 in the ninth. So much to talk about here, but the big blow obviously was the grand slam by Michael Taylor in the eighth off of Wade Davis. An interesting pitching change that was made by Joe Madden.
Interesting is the word that you use.
1-0 count.
Bit of a euphemism there, I think.
How much flack is he going to get assuming that the Cubs do not win this game?
Well, I think he's going to get a lot of flack, and I think he deserves it. You know, Carl Edwards Jr., other than his hiccup versus Bryce Harper on Saturday, has been one of the best relievers in baseball. Michael A. Taylor is not exactly one of the heavy hitters in that Nationals lineup. He's not the guy you would expect to hit a grand slam if you were picking out of their lineup. So, you know, I would have probably left Edwards in, and if I was going to pull him, I certainly would not have done it with a 1-0 count. What a terrible situation to put Wade Davis in, bringing him in with the bases loaded, down in the count. It's just, you were just setting up your closer for failure there. It's just indefensible.
That's always, we hear that cliche a lot in sports where it's the job of the manager or the coach to put your players in the best position to succeed. And in that particular situation, that's not what happened there.
Right. It's almost like a double whammy because he also, I'm not that Carl Edwards is going to be shattered by this, but
right.
he now feels like, oh, he doesn't have faith in me.
Right.
And he put Wade Davis in a tough spot.
And going back to even Game 7 of the World Series last year and throughout this series, you know, even it just feels like even when Madden may make the correct bullpen move, it just hasn't turned out well. Like, no matter what he's done, like the other night in Game 3, it just seems like no matter what button he pushes, it just hasn't quite been the right one in a key situation.
Yeah, and in this situation, in this game, you'll look at it and say, okay, they're down one run. They were just in this situation in Game 3. They came back and won. Strasburg's coming out of the game. You know that you've got six outs to play with going forward. And I don't mind there if he puts Davis in at the beginning of that at bat. If he says, look, you know what, Davis is the best guy we've got. We're throwing our best arm out there. That's how we're going to roll. Fine. But when Carl Edwards throws a pitch, Wade Davis mentally says, okay, I'm not coming in this at bat.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, he sees the arm come up. It's like, all right, Joe, I'm coming in.
Yeah.
And then two pitches later, game's over.
You're already at a 1-0 count. I mean, that might seem like nothing, but that's something.
The bases are loaded.
And the bases are loaded. And you know if you make a bad pitch here, it's now 2-0. It was 1-1. Throws a fastball after that, and it's a home run. And meanwhile, Steven Strasburg is going to feel such a sense of relief, what he had to go through. I mean, who knows what the truth was and what really was going on with him. But if I think the entire city of Washington, D.C., you know, would wanted him. they were not happy with him up until the first pitch here today.
No, not happy. Probably another understatement, like you said.
He was amazing. Pitched like the game of his life.
Yes, absolutely. His flu game, I guess you could say.
The flu game. The mold game.
The mold game, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, he was absolutely dominant today. I don't know if many people expected. I mean, at his best, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. We all know that. But I think a lot of people thought, you know, bringing his mental or intestinal fortitude into question a little bit,
yeah.
His ability to pitch with a little bit of an illness or a mold issue.
Well, now, did they switch hotels? I read that they switched hotels. Did they really? Did anyone see LC?
I didn't see that, sure. But that would be the most baseball thing ever, right? Like, only in baseball would that happen. If you say, well, you know, the mold's getting to us. Listen, ultimately, with Strasburg, if he came out today, and you kind of alluded to it, if he got shelled today, it would have been a firestorm in the nation's capital. As it turns out, he pitches incredibly, and now, assuming they go back here for Game 5, you have a situation where Washington, now the pressure's more on the Cubs.
And that's the funny thing. I think the pressure is now back, believe it or not, on the Nationals because
really?
They've never won a playoff series. They get Game 5 in their home. You better win. You better win.
I
think you're right, Chuck.
Yeah, because the Cubs already won a World Series. They won the World Series. I mean, granted, this is a disaster here today, but the bigger pressure, I think, is on the Nationals.
I think you're right. But I also think, like, that's, you know, that whole who's got the pressure thing. Like, once the game starts, I think it's like, who cares at that point? But I do think you're right from a psychological advantage. I do think the pressure is still on the Nationals just because they haven't been there.
To me, this feels like, I was saying it, I didn't expect a grand slam by Michael Taylor, but when it was 1-0, my prediction was the Nationals are going to win this game, and then they're going to go into D.C., and they're going to lose. And the Cubs will win it in 5.
You know, this is...
I'm laughing. I don't know why I'm laughing. Like, the Nationals have never won a playoff series, and I'm like, how can we make it as bad as possible for the Nationals? They'll win this game, they'll go home, and they'll lose.
The good thing for the Cubs here, despite the fact that this game was a backbreaker, is they have Kyle Hendricks going in Game 5.
Yeah.
Washington could do nothing against him in Game 1 of this series. He has been coming up so huge in big games, whether it was against Clayton Kershaw last year in the NLCS, Game 7 of the World Series. He shows up when the pressure is on, when all of the attention is on him. I think they got a good shot.
And it's going to start probably with Gio Gonzalez and with Max Scherzer waiting in the wings if they need him. That's going to be some game, assuming the Cubs don't come back and win this one in the ninth.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.